This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Friday today. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Happy Black Friday. I wore a t-shirt today when I went grocery shopping that said, let's see, amidst the hatred and the carnage, it is still possible to have wonderful encounters and beautiful things. Or something like that. So, yeah. So, anyways, yesterday was Thanksgiving. Spent the day with the family. We had some friends over, played some games, ate some food. It was fun. I'm actually heading back home now, and we are going to... The kids are just coming down, and Amber's coming up from the basement. We're just gonna play some games and kick around a little bit. We haven't done that in a while, so it'll be good. It's 10:35, so I plan to be home about 10:45, and then we'll get some things started. And so I think my kids have an appointment this evening. She said they'll have to leave about 4:34 to get to, and so we'll have several hours where we can just kick around and play games, and it should be fun. Did my normal Friday things this morning, just do grocery shopping for us, and then did grocery shopping for my dad, and wore my t-shirt and crazy socks, and talked to people at Walmart, so just a normal Friday. So all is well there. I have crossed 80,000 words on book 8, which means that's all going well and good and fine, and getting ready to close that up, and then come back to it in January after I finish the production copy of book 7. So the beta readers are starting to come back in. I just adjusted the recorder a little bit there. I did send an email out to all the beta readers just to kind of remind and explain, for those who hadn't heard it before, my writing philosophy. And that is that I really don't write to be read. You know, I don't market myself hardly at all. You know, I don't really write to amuse readers. I don't write to make them laugh or make them cry or titillate them or offend them. I don't write to make them feel good. I write because I'm trying to figure out the world. And that process is an amazing process for me. I like to think about things. I said in the email, I'm a systems guy. I like to understand how things work. I like to understand how everything works. All kinds of relationships, physical relationships in the world, spiritual relationships, gender relationships. I like to understand how they work. And so after I've been thinking deeply about stuff for a while, it tends to come out in my writing, because what I'm trying to do with my writing is I'm a good enough writer, I can invent a set of characters and I can throw them into a situation, and then I can watch how they react to it. And then the process then of watching how they react to it, I can learn from that. It doesn't mean my characters are going to make the right decisions, or it doesn't mean they're going to always say the right things. People are confused by this sometimes. They don't get that when I'm writing from the perspective, well, they don't get in general that when a good writer is writing from the perspective of the character, it is that character's perspective. It's not necessarily the writer's perspective. So, characters end up saying things they shouldn't say and doing things they shouldn't do. And it's easy sometimes with actions, because if you have a character who's killing another character, you know, no one thinks, oh, that author really wants to kill somebody. No, not really. But in terms of saying certain things about certain things, like, you know, if you're going to talk about sex, or you're going to talk about gender relationships, or you're going to talk about personal things, it's very easy for people to say, oh, well, that must be how the author feels about this. When the author, it might be just trying to explore what that character might do, and in my case, so that then I can look at it and say, yeah, that was a really bad decision, and look where it led. It allows me to prehearse life, and it's really cool. I like it a lot. So, anyways, since book seven was earthier than some of the other books have been, and all the books have been earthy, but this one was earthier, thought it would probably be good to write the beta readers and say, so here's some stuff to think about. So, anyways, that all goes well. Seems to all be fine. I don't know how many quotes I'm going to have for the back cover on this. We will see. We will see. Anyways, so, come here around April the 1st, next year, beta copy of book 8 should be done. And then come around July 1st, we will have closed the first octet. Booyah! Should be halfway through the first book of the second octet, which will be a change of tone. It will be fun. Anyways, I was listening to a TED Talk, and this is going to have to be shorter, because as soon as I get home, I got to get stuff unloaded, so I got to get through this. And I thought this was very interesting. I didn't understand the title, frankly, at first. But the farther I got into the TED Talk, I thought, okay, there's some interesting points in this. Things to think about. The title of the TED Talk was, "We're Building a Dystopia Just to Make People Click on Ads." And she was talking about how people have a fear of the future, and when they look to the future and look to artificial intelligence and look to all the advances, she said, very often you get the classic movie Hollywood scenario where robots are running amok and killing people, you know, the Matrix type thing. Or she said, we fret about the whole digital surveillance thing where in 1984, everyone is hunkered down and afraid. She said, but from her viewpoint, much of the technology that is going to threaten our freedom in the near-term future is being developed by companies that are in the business of capturing and selling our data and attention to advertisers and others. Facebook, Amazon, Google, Alibaba, Tencent. I don't know what Tencent is. She mentioned Tencent. And she made that claim because she said of what is happening in the next phase, this order of magnitude. It used to be that when you would order advertising from some of these big giants, you would base it on keywords. So you'd say, well, if they type in these type of words and they're searching for it, then I want to go ahead and show my ad. With the advent of artificial intelligence, especially if the company has access to a lot of your data like a Facebook does. If you post a lot, you may not think you're revealing much about yourself to Facebook. But if you post a lot on Facebook, it doesn't really matter what you're saying. You are revealing a tremendous amount about your personality, your likes, your dislikes. And with the advent of artificial intelligence, all of that can be taken, and some pretty astounding and accurate predictions can be made about you. She was talking about this in terms of persuasion architectures. And persuasion architectures in the past have always been something that's been more of a shotgun approach, to where you're just saying, we know we've kind of got this one segment of the market out there that we're going to target, and so bam, you know, we're going to hit them with this message and we're going to try to tailor it. But with artificial intelligence, with the advent of platforms where people are coming to a specific place, they are leaving information about themselves and they're coming back over and over. Those persuasion architectures don't have to be shotgun anymore. They can be targeted. They can be more like a sharpshooter, where they can target towards specific. Wow, there's lots of cars here. I'm turning and there's two police cars and looks like someone's been pulled over by a state trooper. Oh. There was a guy, he was kind of waving at me and pointing, and I was getting ready to slow down and stop, and then I realized even after I was going past him, he was still looking beyond me and waving, so I'm not sure what. Anyways. So what they can do now is they can focus and target towards very specific types of things. And you've got these learning algorithms that are assisting them that nobody is quite sure exactly how they work. So they said, for instance, now they're going to start targeting you with ads. And we've all had that thing where we look on something on Amazon and then where we go on the web, it's trying to get us to buy that thing. That's a crude example of that kind of targeting. And people go, oh yeah, that's okay, fine. But there can be more sophisticated stuff. For instance, you might have looked up a Las Vegas ticket or something in Las Vegas, and so then they're trying to say, well, hey, these tickets are on sale to Las Vegas. Yeah, well, that's all fine and well. But based on, for instance, your posts on Facebook, algorithms exist. I think she said they exist, which they will exist if they don't. Where just simply by analyzing your posts on Facebook, they can tell if you're a manic depressive and if you're possibly starting into a manic phase. They can run the probabilities on that. It's not exact. High probability of prediction. Well, if they know that, some unscrupulous advertisers might say, you know what? I think for people going to Las Vegas, we are very interested in suggesting that those people go to Las Vegas if they're manic depressives and they're right on the front edge of a manic phase, because if they are, it means they're going to go to Las Vegas and spend a lot of money. Now you start getting into gray areas where you're exploiting people. So that's all interesting. I've got to finish this up because I'm heading towards home. But what's also very interesting is the fact that all of these learning algorithms, no one knows exactly why they're picking what they're picking, because they're all this black box of neural networks. It's like trying to figure out how a brain is thinking what it's thinking. And one of the trendings and things that you see, like when you go to YouTube and you watch a video and then all of a sudden it starts suggesting more videos. Why does it start suggesting more videos? Because they want to click. They want another click. They want another click. They want another click. Because the longer they keep you on the site, the more chance there is that you will click on an ad. So their goal is to make that site as sticky as possible. Click, 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 click. And they found that if they use these learning algorithms to suggest, I need to talk louder because I'm going down my road. They found that if they use these learning algorithms to suggest new videos to you, that they have a higher stickiness to their site because they can find stuff that might be similar to what you want to see. Except the big question is, how do these learning algorithms know what to suggest? No one is exactly sure, but we know that they have been fed a bunch of data. Backing into my garage, they have been fed a bunch of data and they have found patterns in that data. The lady who was giving the talk said she had a very interesting experience because she said she was covering, I think, both Trump and Hillary Clinton rallies for her work. And so she was actually clicking on some of these videos from the rallies, and the thing she started noticing is that as she started clicking on these videos, YouTube would start suggesting other videos, and before she knew it, YouTube was suggesting alt-right videos, Nazi videos, white supremacy videos, because some people who were looking up Donald Trump stuff were also looking at those. And what's her concern, and I think it's a valid concern, is that if we don't understand why videos are being suggested, that we can actually end up in a situation where we are, in essence, radicalizing people because these learning algorithms go, oh, well, those people who are watching those videos, they click on all the sites a lot more. So those are the videos we need to show people because that keeps people on the site. Never mind, you know, maybe that's not what we want people watching. It's an interesting new world. I gotta go. Happy Thanksgiving. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.